Yay, good morning. Well, thank you everyone for coming to this midday keynote. I want to thank our event partners, Microsoft, for having us here on campus. The Visual Studio team, of course, gives us great support since it is Visual Studio Live. Our platinum sponsors, Microsoft Learning, Micro Focus, and our gold sponsor, SmartBear, which, by the way, you can get one of these nice chapeaux if you want, if they still have some. Beyond that, though, I don't want to cut into Donovan's time or keep you any further from lunch, because right after Donovan's talk is the Birds of the Feather lunch. But I do want to introduce Donovan really quickly. He is a fantastic human. And normally you start this stuff, you say, you know, he works at Microsoft, all this stuff, but Donovan is just one of the nicest guys out there. And when I first met him, there was nothing he wouldn't do to help me in anything that I wanted to talk to him about. And one of those things was, how do I stop getting my rear end handed to me when I go play air hockey? Because Donovan happens to be, now are we still 11th? Or have you moved up? He's been as high as ranked as 11th in the world. And if you watch this guy play, it's crazy, okay? So you think he is amazing at DevOps, get him on air hockey. But in either case, Donovan is a wonderful human who is all about doing one thing, removing the impediments to you being successful with tools and technology like VSTS. And when it comes to that, it's all about DevOps. So without further ado, please give a warm welcome to my good friend, Mr. Donovan Brown.
Thank you so much, Sean. Brian, thank you so much for that, and good morning, everyone. Let's try that again. Good morning, everyone. Perfect. Thank you. As he said, my name is Donovan Brown. I am a senior DevOps program manager here at Microsoft. I am responsible for the DevOps vision on top of Team Foundation Server and Visual Studio Team Services. I have been writing software for about 20 years. If you're older like me, you might remember a company called Compaq Computers. Anyone remember that old company? Loved it. It was where I started. Funny story, I actually started writing software in Visual C++ 1.52. Right? That was my first compiler, and now I work for the team that wrote my first compiler. It's kind of surreal some days, right? Because I hope I'm working on tools that some guy 20 years from now is going to say, I was working on that tool, and now I work for the team that created that. So I love, love, love working for Microsoft. As you said, I was as high as 11 in the world. The only reason I put that up there in the racing the cars is I am hyper competitive. I can turn anything into a competition. Anything, right? You can ask my fiance, she hates it. But I can do it. And the reason that I like that about myself is because I install our competitors' tools. I play with their products. I find out what makes them good so that our products can be great, right? I want to crush all of them. You just do not understand. It's really, really a passion of mine to come to work and figure out how our tools can be great, and that's what I'm going to try to show you here today. So my objectives, having DevOps in my title came with a lot of responsibility at Microsoft. They actually asked me to define it when I showed up. This was not go search for someone else's definition. This was go define it for Microsoft and what it means for DevOps for us and how we're going to move forward and make sure it enables our customers to do the exact same thing. And I'll talk to you about that definition. And then I'm going to demo our offering. This is one of my riskiest demos that I do. I literally start from a blank desktop. And I'm going to build an entire DevOps pipeline right here in front of you. Everyone watching me could actually do this for them as well. This isn't some demo that we've been working on for 9 months and you got to be us to go figure it out. And then I'm going to show you this baked cake that you could never build yourself. This is, let's do this right now together and prove that I can actually do this. So that's what we're going to be doing. So what is DevOps? Like I said, I've been writing software for a really long time. When they asked me to define it, I didn't just go off, like I said, and search for someone else's. What I said is, let me reflect over my own career and really think, what is DevOps and why is it important? Have you guys ever been on a project that was over budget? Everyone raise your hand. Thank you. Have you ever been on a project that missed its deadline? Everyone, raise your hands one more time for me. Everyone? Thank you, right? And then when you finally push it out the door, it only did half the things it was supposed to do. Everyone, one more time. There we go. Really good. Everyone, raise your hands. I, unfortunately, was on a project that did all of those things. We were late, we were over budget, and it was a piece of crap when we pushed it out into production, right? Fighting fires like nobody's business because we just didn't know how to write software well. Okay. Are any of you old enough to remember the days when you finished with your software and you personally got to go onto the production server and actually copy your files onto that machine? Yeah, those days are gone, because after I did that, all the lights on the server went off, right? And not only my app stopped running, but every other app on that server went down and everyone's pulling their hair like, what the hell's going on, man? So what happened? The ops guy said, that's it, Donovan. You don't get to touch that machine anymore. What you have to do is write this big, long document that tells me exactly what to do and give me your binaries. Think you had any chance of reading that document and getting that software installed? Not at all. You thought my code was bad? You should have read my documents. They were horrible. Because you got to remember, when you're writing this document of how to install your software, you're not thinking of everything that could go wrong. But when you're on the server and something stupid happens, you just immediately fix it. But you forget to put that in the doc. So that when the poor ops guy is reading that document, there's parts that are missing. There's emergency cases that he doesn't know about, and the software doesn't install correctly. He points the finger at you, you point the finger at him, and this chasm just starts to build between ops and dev, right? They don't trust me, I don't trust them, and all of a sudden it's just slowing down everything. Because to get code into production, I now have to get red tape, I have to get signatures, I gotta get approvals, I gotta prove that it works. And next thing you know, I finished this code months ago. But here we are months later and it's still not in production, and that's a problem. So what did we do? We had to fix how we created software. We started with Agile, Scrum, we did test-driven development, Kanban, and what that allowed us to do as developers was to produce value, right? We're all working on really short sprints and we're producing value very rapidly. Is that value getting to our customers? No, because the ops still don't trust us. Right? So here I am with these features just dying on the vine because they won't get them into production fast enough. So what we're going to do with DevOps, as I always make this joke, is we're just going to rub a little DevOps on this problem, and we're going to make it go away because we're going to get trust between these two people. How? By taking the people out of it. Right? DevOps is not just automation, but it's an extremely important part of DevOps is to automate as much as you possibly can so there is no human error, and there is no Donovan touching the machine or the ops guy not installing it correctly. The tools are going to do that for us. So after I reflected over my career and the pains of being a DevOps guy or an engineer, this is the definition that we came up with. DevOps is the union of people, process, and products to enable continuous delivery of value to our end users. There's a lot of key words here. Fun fact, took me 30 days to write this one sentence. My boss still gives me crap over it. 30 days. But I've labored over every single word. I've had to defend this so many times, internally and externally to Microsoft. You just have no idea. Why does it not say culture? Because people define your culture, right? Not the other way around. So that's why I chose people versus culture. Why does it say, they're products versus tools? First of all, tools don't build a DevOps pipeline. A tool is a hammer and a saw. Did the hammer and the saw build your house? No, the carpenter did, right? It's products that take the tools and bring them together such that I can deliver my software. So that's why I chose the word products over tools, right? Plus, it's kind of cool. It's the three P's of DevOps, right? So it kind of worked out for me. And I say value. It is not about copying files to a server, guys. It is about delivering value to our end users. And you can actually deliver value without even changing your application. I might upgrade our infrastructure. Right? I might build out faster servers or scale them up or scale them out or whatever scaling you want to do, and I actually have added value to our end users. But to deliver value, I have to be able to measure what it is that I've just delivered. You can't just copy files out there, fingers crossed people use them, and then say we delivered value. What you have to be able to do is monitor the application as it's being used by your users and determine that new button that we added, are people clicking it or not? That new feature that we added, are people finding it or not? That's how I know if I delivered value. Otherwise, if no one's finding that new feature, we literally just copied files to a server. And no one is actually getting value out of it. And what I love about Microsoft is we help you do all of this stuff. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. So value is extremely important. And what I do as a product manager on the Visual Studio Team Services team is I try to create the coolest products that I can because the people is the hardest part of this definition to fix. We have gotten successful over 30 years of doing it the way that we do it. And how dare you tell me I need to change it. Right? I like the way that we do it. And look at this, we're the biggest XYZ company in the world. Why in the world should we have to change what we do? Well, short answer is because your competition is. Right? Has anyone ever seen a motorcycle in the rearview mirror and never thought a second thought about it until it passes you doing 100 miles an hour? And what used to be far behind you is passing you at a speed in which you could never catch them? Ask the retail company about it. Yep, they'll tell you about Amazon, who was that speck in their rearview mirror that they did not give a crap about until it passed them so fast that they are now playing catch up. Ask the transportation industry about Uber, a speck in their rearview mirror. They were not concerned with these people, but they were doing practices that they had no idea about because they were too arrogant, too big, or too stubborn to realize that they needed to change the way that they did their software. You have two choices when it comes to DevOps. You either adopt it or you lose to the company that does. Right? Those are your options. So it's very important that you go back in there and you make sure that you embrace this and you get your people on board. Because I can sell you all the tools in the world and define your process, but if your people do not believe, you're still going to fail. And what I try to do is create cool products to make your people believe so that we can actually enable your process for you. So why do it? Because your competition's doing it. I mean, that's the simplest part. It's going to be allow you to increase your velocity and increase your quality at the same time, which is some. It's usually like, that doesn't make sense. I'm going to write more tests, take more time to develop code, but actually go faster and deliver more frequently and higher quality code. Yes, you're actually going to be able to do that. It reduces your downtime. How many ASP.NET developers do I have? How many of you have been burned by one file called a web.config? Everyone raise your hands again for me, please. You've all been in that file on a production server and made a mistake on your web.config, right? You left off an angle bracket, got the yellow screen of death, right? Or worse yet, I think that's the best case scenario. Worst case scenario is you put the wrong connection string in your dev machine and now it's pointing at production, right? These are the type of mistakes human beings make that machines don't make. Never send a person to do a machine's job. That's what we need to be doing here, is making the machines do that, because they'll do it perfect every single time. They don't get tired, they don't get fatigued, they don't get bored, they don't make mistakes, they just do exactly what they're told over and over again. And that's what we're going to be doing here too. Reduce your downtime and reduce your human error. This, if you don't remember anything else about our time together, guys, please leave here remembering this. I know we're in VS Live and we're all friendly, we're all Visual Studio programmers, but you're going to go back to a company, I'm certain, that has other languages running around that company. They all can use what I'm about to show you. Any language, any platform. If it's Java, you want to build on Linux, fine. If it's iOS that you want to build on Mac, fine. If it's .NET you want to build on Windows, definitely got you covered there. Any language, any platform. So please make sure that you understand that. Our tools are drastically different. If the last time that you looked at our system was 2013, you need to take another look. Because 2015 is drastically different. Any language, any platform. And we're doing it all over the world with very, very large companies who were historically Atlassian and Java, who are now Java and Microsoft, right? Because we can do that. And we make them hyper productive, and a lot of them already own it, right? Because they have so many MSDN licenses, they still need platform licenses, and they already own these tools. There's no reason to buy them again. So I'm going to go over this one pretty quickly. This is basically what you're trying to manage when you're managing a DevOps pipeline. You have to take your idea and groom it and store it and break it down to make sure that you know exactly what it is your team's doing. And you can do that both in Team Foundation Server and Visual Studio Team Services. Gone are the iron days. Like I said, I worked at Compaq Computers. I remember ProLiant servers going out the doors, taking weeks to get to their destination, where some poor guy has to uncrate this model, just ginormous computer, stick it into a rack, and then go click his life away in wizards trying to configure this thing, right? It would take weeks, months to provision a server. Now, with the cloud, that's changed. At a moment, you can have anything that you want. And we have a tool called Azure Resource Manager Templates, which is just basically a fancy JSON file that we can give to our tools that will spin up whatever infrastructure you want instantly in Azure. If it's already there, it just confirms it's already there. If it's there but not quite right, it'll go and fix it for you. It's a really cool technology. This is infrastructure as code. Take my infrastructure, codify it, check it into source control, and allow the tools and the products to actually act upon it to bring my infrastructure into existence. Just because I spun up a Windows machine does not mean that Windows machine is ready to host my ASP.NET app. What does it need on it? .NET framework, IIS installed, and port 80 open. Some poor guy going to go over there and click around in the wizard? No. What you need to do is define that configuration as a file, code that I can check into version control, and then give it again to a tool, which will hand it to that server, and that server will install IIS on it. It will open up port 80, and it will install the right version of .NET framework for you. And should it ever drift, it will go back and correct itself, right? This is going to stop those. It worked yesterday, and now it doesn't work today because I had some guy hopped on there and unchecked the box he shouldn't have checked. He'll never touch that machine again. Our configuration, our infrastructure, and our code all live side by side, and they're always deployed as a unit, right? These are some of the great best practices, and again, we support this at Microsoft as well. One thing I love about the way that we deploy software, we are BYOB, bring your own binary. We don't care what it is. You want to do NuGet packages? Great. You want to do MSI, zip, DLL, we don't care. Just give us the binary that you produce, and we will help you deploy that to any platform that you want. A lot of the other tools out there, they kind of say, hey, you got to do it this one way. You got to fit into this box, otherwise we can't deploy your code. Well, we don't do that. Whatever you want to do, bring it, and we're going to go ahead and deploy it for you. Now, remember that web.config? We fixed that for you. We have this technique called tokenization, where you basically give us a skeleton that says, hey, in these key areas, there's going to be values that I'm going to want you to replace for me. And then you tell us in each environment what those values should be, and then we replace them for you so that you never have to touch a web.config again. If you start using PaaS web services, or PaaS app services, so that we have web apps, you can actually store your configuration in your connection strings right there with the actual definition of your web app. It's pretty nice, because then you don't have to worry about what's in your web.config. You can have it configured for your developers, but when it gets in deployed, it uses the values that are defined on the web app itself, which makes life really, really easy. So we have lots of different options for that. I have a show on Channel 9 called DevOps Interviews, and just yesterday, I spent some time with a friend of mine named Gopi. We talked about testing and its importance on DevOps. It's extremely, extremely important. Remember, we're not trying to rush crap to production. We're trying to rush value to production, and you have to test. I'll be posting that later this evening so that you can go back in and watch it if you like, but it was a really nice conversation about automated unit testing and performance testing, when to use Selenium versus coded UI and all kinds of cool stuff, and how it actually impacts the value that you intend to deliver. And we enable that through Visual Studio Team Services, not just .NET testing, right? You can run XUnit, MBUnit, Mocha, Jasmine, JUnit with code coverage, right? So we're, again, any language, any platform is what we're providing here. But before you run your tests, like integration tests need data. And what we can do when you're doing SQL Server is we can actually do things with backpacks. Backpacks are like DACPACs, but they have data too, which basically means I have this test data that I want to be in my database before I start running my tests, so I get good results back, right? So we can actually do that for you. Once the database is stood up and has data in it, we can run any web framework or testing framework that you want. All right, this is another thing I want you to remember for me, so I'm going to pause for a second for effect. If you can do it from a command line, or you can do it from a REST API, you can do it from our build system and from our release system. Anything. So before you ask, Donovan, can you run our off-the-shelf testing framework? I'm going to go back and say, does it have a CLI? Yes, then the answer is yes. Whatever scripts that you currently have today in your infrastructure that you've handwritten to help you deploy, to help you test, to help you build, we can run those exact same scripts for you right now. But we won't forget to run them. We won't fat finger an argument. We'll run it perfectly for you every single time. So you don't have to stop what you're doing today. You don't have to relearn something. You can take the investments in your infrastructure and in your process today and immediately leverage it in a more automated fashion using our tool set. Any language, any platform, anything from a command line, including for Linux, you want to run a bash script, that's fine. You want to do something funky on Mac, that's fine. Our agent happily runs on Windows, Mac, and Linux. Any language, any platform. I think we are a long, long way from having not needing manual test. If your app has a user interface and you're pushing it to production without people looking at it, do that at your own risk. Best story I was told was where they have all this automation, so they really trusted their automation, they ran all these automated tests, and it worked great, so they pushed it into production, but all of a sudden, there's this wizard and no one's clicking the finish button. They'd get all the way to the end and they would just abandon. They're like, I don't understand, I know it works because our automation worked. Well, the change that they made was a CSS change. The CSS change that they pushed made the button text match the button color. No one in their right mind is clicking that button. But a computer happily clicked it because it knew the ID matched the ID that I was supposed to click. It didn't know it wasn't text on there. So manual testing is still a very important part of a DevOps pipeline. And what's really nice is our tools will pause for you and allow you to go ahead and do that exploratory testing, manual testing. And when and only when you give us the thumbs up will we then take that code and deploy it for you out into the next environment. Could be production, might be staging or QA or whatever you guys like. Build whatever length pipeline that you need to, and we'll help you manage it. Throughout this entire thing, we're having approvals be sent. Like, those approvals can be sent to individuals, they can be sent to groups, and then we will wait and collect those approvals for you before we move your code forward. And remember I said value. To deliver value, you have to monitor the application. We do this with a tool called Application Insights. If you're doing mobile, we do this with Xamarin Insights and or Hockey App, right? So everything that I just said here is true for mobile as well, right? Microsoft literally has everything that you need to build this for both back-end services, databases, mobile applications, does not matter. We manage the entire stack for you. Now, some people are going to say, well, we don't want one vendor to do everything. We want best of breed. Any part of this can be replaced with whatever tool you want, right? So if you want to use Jenkins versus our build system, so be it. You might already have an investment in Jenkins, decades of builds that you want to continue to leverage, fine. We'll use those builds for you. You already have a deployment system, but you want to use our source control, fine. Every portion of this can be replaced with a tool of your choice, and I'll show you that here in just a second. This is obviously the tools that we had. I just kind of went over this for you. We break it down into the dev, the build and test, deploy and monitor and learn. And this is what we offer here from Microsoft. Now, this slide you'd expect to see, but this slide you would not expect to see. These are tools that are generally not associated with Microsoft that all integrate with our tool set. And I'll show you a marketplace later on in the demo where you can go and see other vendors that you can use immediately with our tool set with no modifications to anything that you're doing today. And this is, again, any language, any platform. This is not a slide that is normally in a Microsoft deck that has all these weird names on it, right? But we support all this and we work with it, so here you go. Aha, now we're good to the good part. Like I said, this is the most risky demo I've ever done, so I hope you do appreciate the risk that I am taking trying to do this for you today. I start from basically a blank desktop, so I'm gonna stop this. Here's my desktop, maybe not. I'm installing input 9, so where did my desktop go? Let's try this one more time. Ugh. That is a blank desktop. If I could get DevOps on there, you all better be clapping. There we go. That is my desktop, right? And I was thinking it would be funny because I have Windows 10. I could actually have this desktop and just swap over to another one and just be done with the demo, but I think you guys would tell that I'm cheating. So right now, I feel like a magician. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to prove to you that I don't have like a rabbit already in the hat. So I'm going to go to Azure, and I'm also going to go to my Visual Studio Team Services account. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you that during this demo, I'm going to attempt to build an entire DevOps pipeline with Dev, QA, and Prod for a web app that we're going to deploy throughout Azure. And I'm going to do all this inside of a resource group called End-to-End Demo. And I want to basically prove that that does not already exist. So we're going to go End-to-End Demo. And I want to search for it. As you can see, there is no resource group called End-to-End Demo, but there will be here soon. This is Visual Studio Team Services. It is everything that you need to turn an idea into a working piece of software. Everything. It is not just build. It is not just release, it is source control, work item tracking, test case management, everything that you need to turn an idea into a working piece of software, and I'm gonna demo lots of it for you here today. To get started, what we need is a team project. A team project is a logical grouping of all those things I just described. My test cases, my source control, my builds, my bugs, my requirements, the whole nine yards. We understand that there are some people out there who are agile and some that are not. If you are specifically Scrum, we have a template for you as well. And we also have one for CMMI, which is the traditional waterfall type of development that can actually be successful. It worked for a long time for certain people. Git and TFVC, I hate Git, right? I'm not bashful about it. I can't stand it. Too many words, too much typing. But it's very, very popular. So I thought it was a brilliant idea for us to put Git inside of Team Foundation Server and Visual Studio Team Services. And because everyone likes it, besides me, I'm actually going to demo out of Git just to prove that I can actually do it. And we obviously going to tell, I only want my team members to see this, so I'm going to go ahead and create. So what it's doing in the background is it's building this logical container for me that has everything that I just mentioned in it. It knows that I want to be agile, so it uses certain words for me. If I had chosen Scrum, I would see words like sprint, product backlog item, and impediment in the user interface. But because I chose agile, it's going to use user story, issue, and iteration. But had I chose CMMI, it would use requirements. You get the point here, right? It literally changes its whole vocabulary to make sure that I'm comfortable with the tool immediately. I don't talk one way in my daily stand-up and then have to go map my words to the words that I see on the screen because they don't match. They always match because the tool understands how you write software. So here in a moment, once the internet catches up with me, perfect. It's going to go off and create that for me, and then I'm going to be able to jump into the tool and start building out this DevOps pipeline. We're going to use Git, create a Git repo, create a build definition, a release definition, and we're going to do this from code that doesn't even exist right now. Maybe I should have hardwired because my internet is going really, really slow. I'll blame Brian for this. Stop surfing over there, man. Get off Facebook. Give me my bandwidth back. And then once this is done, we will be ready to rock and roll. There we go. So now we basically have a team project that is ready for me to start working on. This is an overview dashboard. I'm going to bring you back to this near the end of the demo because we can actually customize this and make it the really cool place for you to see what it is that you're wanting to work on. If you're familiar with Git, you probably know what GitHub is. And GitHub is where we basically all have this like little README file at the beginning that kind of tells you what the project is about. We allow you to create one of those for you too. So as you can see here, we have a Git repo. I want to go ahead and say create a README file for me. And this README file is going to define what it is that we're going to try to do here in this demo. So what I'm going to do is I can actually edit it. So this is in Markdown. Oh yeah, I hate Markdown too, by the way, in case you didn't know that. I don't know, HTML was good enough for my generation, but now we got to do everything in Markdown. There's not a good Markdown editor out there, so it's always a nightmare. But I'm going to show you some cool stuff that we can do right here in the web. So this is a file that it created for me. I can click on edit, and I can literally edit it right here in the web. And this editor isn't too half bad. So let's go over here and let's change this title here. And we're going to say rub DevOps on it. And if I come over here and I preview it, I can actually see that the Markdown looks pretty good. I can go ahead and commit this directly from the web browser. So if I wanted to add files really quickly, make quick modifications to my code, I could actually go ahead and do that. One thing I also like about our tools, it kind of tries to guide you through the process. As you can see, it has identified that I have a Git repo, but I don't have a build set up for this Git repo yet. And it's kind of encouraging me, hey, you should probably set up a CI build for this. So that's a good best practice. So let's go ahead and do that. Again, remember, any language, any platform, there's Ant, and we got Gradle and Maven for all the Java developers out there. You don't have to change anything about your project, just give us your files and we'll compile them for you. You want to do some Android development, but you don't want to use Xamarin, you can do that. We prefer that you use Xamarin, and if you want to do that, we have builds down here for that as well. So it doesn't matter how you want to do your development or where, we actually have you covered. Not only can we build your code, but directly from build, we can even go ahead and deploy it for you. This is a great feature for companies that go directly to production. They don't need a big, long, drawn-out pipeline. They just need it to get, compile, build, and just run it, right? And what we can do is to say, hey, I would like to do that here, and I'm just going to show you what this builds for you. We're not actually going to use this, but I'm going to show you how it actually works. Here I have different agent pools. These are basically machines waiting to do my builds and my releases for me. We have one of them hosted that's on the cloud for you automatically. There's nothing for you to install. You can immediately start using the hosted ones. I like my default ones because I built some big honking machines and they're really, really fast and it works really well for demos. And as you can see, I can have as many as I want. I demo a lot with Scott Gu. He gets his own collection of agents that no one else is allowed to touch, right? Because those demos always have to work. So it's really nice how you can separate this up. You see I have Max and I have some on Red Hat. It's really cool stuff here that we can do. So what it's doing now is it's basically creating a build definition for me. Who remembers the XAML-based builds? Who liked the XAML-based builds? Everyone put your hands down. I actually like them. I bet you like them too, because we were consultants.
Yep.
I loved them. They were so hard to customize, you had to hire me to do it, right? And after you hired me to do it, you were stuck with me for decades. It was awesome. But we took all that money away from the consultants when we built this build system, which is clearly what we should have built the first time. It is task-based. It's very, very simple for you to add new items to. Our competition, our partners, and vendors go back in and add new tasks, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. It knows about NuGet. It allows me to go ahead and build my code and package it for the web. I love code coverage. I'm a big fan of code coverage. We talk about that more in the interview I'll post later. So I can actually check one box, and that box is now going to calculate code coverage over the test that I generate. Now, this is where it would actually deploy to Azure for me, but I want to show you our full pipeline using release management. So just as easy, I can go ahead and say, you know what? I don't need that part. I love CI builds, but CI builds have a tendency to fail. They're supposed to fail fast. What happens is they fail fast and my developers ignore them. I don't like that. When they break, they're supposed to go fix them. So what I can do here is simply by checking this box, every time a build fails, a developer will get a bug assigned to him that he cannot run away from that forces him to go back and fix this particular bug. So I always check that box as well. I'm going to come back later and show you some other details, but let's go ahead and create that. So just this quickly, we now have a CI build set up for this particular repository. So every time I start checking in code, it's going to start building. Now let's talk about work. We need to plan our work. If you're at Agile or you're Scrum, you know what a product backlog is. A product backlog is a laundry list of any and everything I want my code to do, period. And it's in priority order. And you need a place that you can manage it. You can manage it right here. Whenever I'm in the back of a sprint review, and a sprint review for the non-agile people is a dog and pony show at the end of every sprint where I show the stakeholders what we were able to produce. And it's a great place for you to solicit input and feedback and ideas from those individuals watching the demo. So I have this up as my team are demoing the product, a cool idea comes out, and I was like, that's a great idea. And I just simply add it to the product backlog. I later have a meeting with my product owner, and we prioritize these to make sure that they're still in the right order, but I'm able to very quickly capture all the ideas that are coming out of this very important meeting. Once we go back and we want to groom it, it's time for us to start breaking this thing down, and I can break it down into the different tasks. Now, the tasks are the individual items that my team are going to have to complete to turn this idea into a working piece of software. For this demo, for example, I need to create a release. So let's put create release. And I can simply go ahead and save and close this. Now, a product backlog is a great way to visualize the priority of everything. How many of you guys are into Kanban, or Kanban, or Kanban, however you want to say it? A few of you guys, so great. We have a board for you, if you're already into it. The board is a visual way of seeing your code move across your pipeline. And it also allows you to set things like WIP limits. WIP stands for work in progress. And you don't want to have your team having more work in progress than they should, because they simply don't get anything done. When I first became a Scrum Master, I lived and died by a burn down chart. It's the total number of hours at day zero, and it should burn down to zero at the end. What I found out is my team was very, very clever. They found a way to burn lots and lots of hours and get nothing done. They would give me these ridiculous estimates of 8 hours, 9 hours, 10 hours, and they would all burn them down to 1 hour left, and then go grab something else. because they were bored with it, or the last hour was the hardest hour, and they were hoping someone else would do the last hour for them. So my burn down every day was looking fantastic. Now all of a sudden, that last couple days come up and nothing is getting done. So what you can do is you can give them a whip limit. A whip limit says you cannot have another piece of candy until you finish the last piece of candy, right? You can only have 4 things in flight at a time, 5 things in flight at a time. You cannot pull that other thing over there until you get one of these items down the pipeline. So that's what a whip limit is. So we wanted to make sure you have that. And you can continue to break things down here. So if I wanted to go ahead and what else do I need? I'm going to need a project. So I have a release, but I need to also have a project that we can actually deploy using our system. And when I'm done here, if I wanted to, I can even reorder my task, and then I can simply drag and drop this over here. By doing that, it has now assigned it to me. Now, again, one thing about Git, when you use Git, you branch like it's the end of the life, right? You branch for everything. You fart, you branch, right? Every time you do anything, you branch. It's the most important thing in the world to do inside of Git is you branch for everything. So what we wanted you to do is if you needed to create a branch to go work on this particular work item, you can do that. You can do it right here from the board, and it says, hey, I would like a safe place for me to go do this work in isolation without jeopardizing anyone else on the team. So what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and do that, just to prove to you that we kind of get Git. I can also go down here and say, hey, I'm going to work on a couple of things. Not only am I going to work on this manager thing, I'm going to go create a project, and then I'm going to go ahead and create this branch. So what it's done for me is it's created that safe place for me to go back in and do my work. So for those who know about Git, now we run to the command line, and I either clone or rebase or fetch or push or there's some other crap you have to do to get the code. I think it's clone is the magic one, right? But you got to get to the command line and do all this crazy stuff. And coming from Visual Studio, that's just not the world I live in. So what we wanted to do is give you the power and flexibility of Git without you having to jump to the command line. I also find it very odd that I check out a branch, but I never check it back in. It's very odd how Git works, and you have to change the way that you think to understand how it works. Granted, I give it a hard time. I've gotten really good with it, but I want to show you that you don't have to be a Git master to work on a team that has Git. So first thing you got to do is clone your repo. As I said before, any language, any platform, I sound like a broken record, but look at the bottom. IntelliJ, Eclipse, Android Studio, the command line. Wherever you're comfortable doing your development, you can do it and integrate with our Git. Our Git is the same Git as everyone else's Git. Right, so if you guys are using GitHub today, you can literally clone your repo, add a remote, push it to that remote, and have all your history in ours, and we give you unlimited private repos for free. If you're paying for repos, stop. Just a little hint. So what I'm going to do is I'm obviously going to do it in Visual Studio. And what it's going to do now is it's going to say, okay, great. I know that you want to use Visual Studio. I'm actually going to fire up Visual Studio for you in the context of this team project. I'm also going to figure out where you need to clone your repo so that you can immediately get started without ever having to see the command line. If you are more comfortable with the command line, you've been using Git for a really long time, feel free to go to the command line and use Git just like you've always been using it today. You don't have to use it this special kind of handheld way if you don't want to do it. So I'm going to go ahead and say I would like to clone this repo. And what it does now is it's actually cloned the entire repo to my hard drive. Repo comes with all the branches, but I specifically created a branch for the work I wanted to do. And from here, I can see the remotes and say double click. And I have now checked out the init branch so that I can go do my work in isolation. If I go back over here to the home, I can simply go ahead and start creating my project. So I'm going to click on new, and I'm going to go ahead and create a MVC 4.5 project. I clearly want application insights. That's how I determine if I delivered value. I said I'm going to create it inside of this particular resource group. This is going to be for my dev website. And I'm going to go ahead and click on OK. I'm going to name it also end-to-end demo. And I'm going to go ahead and click on OK. At this point, I want it to be MVC. For the purpose of this demo, I don't need authentication. I love unit tests, so I'm going to add them. And clearly, we're going to Azure. So we're going to go ahead and click on OK. Now what I'm going to do is I say, hey, I want you to go ahead and create a website for me. And I want you to call it dev. I want you to add it into that same resource group I just mentioned before. And now I get to control what size VMs and what size websites I want you to create. And clearly, I want it in West US because we're here in Seattle and Redmond. So I'm going to choose West US, and I'm going to simply click on OK and create. Visual Studio is doing more than creating the project like it always does and resolving the NuGet packages like it always does. It's actually going to go communicate with Azure and say, oh, by the way, I need you to create a resource group for me. And inside of it, put this website where I'm going to then deploy the application every single time they make a change to it. So if I were to go back now and show you our resource group, and I search for it, I should now see that there's a new resource group in Azure that was not there a moment ago. If I were to then go and look inside of this guy, what I should see is a website that it's going to be creating for me here. So let me go ahead and click on a refresh. And again, we're having some network issues here. I should have probably got on the hardware. There you are. So here's my dev website, my plan, and my application insights. But we need more than just dev. So what I'm going to do is say, I would like to add a resource to this resource group. The one that I want to add is obviously some additional websites. And when I do this, it's going to know exactly where to put them and how to create them. And I just basically need one for QA. And I need another one for production. And while it's off creating those, we're going to go back over into Visual Studio. So I need one for prod. Great. So now it's off doing the heavy work for me, and I'm back over here inside Visual Studio. All I have to do now is go over to changes, because this is a fully functioning application, and just check this in. So this is another Git thing. Everyone who knows Git knows you have to tell them who you are, so I'm doing that right now. I'm going to do an init. And now I'm going to create, I'm going to do something you should never do in Git. I'm going to push right to the repository, right? We're supposed to check in everything locally, work for as long as you need to, and then when you're finally done, you can push it. Whatever. I'm going to go ahead and just check everything in and push it directly over to the repository for this purpose. Now, you got to remember, when I did this, I created my own branch. My CI build was on the master branch. So right now, nothing's actually happening. What it's saying is that, hey, Donovan, you should probably go over and create something called a pull request. A pull request is a way for a developer on a team using Git to say, hey, I've made changes, and I'd like your team to review them, bless them, before they get merged into our master branch. Once they get merged into the master branch, our CI build will kick off. Right here from inside the IDE, I can create a new pull request if I want to. It'll take me back over to the browser, and here we are creating a new pull request. I get to define who's going to be the approvers. I get to define who I want to look at it. They will be able to see all the files and code that I change. I simply create new pull request. All the team members will get notified that, hey, there's a pull request that needs your attention. You'll get emails, notifications inside Visual Studio. And they can come over here, review all my code, have a communication if they want to. And when they're done, they can simply complete the pull request. When I'm done with my pull request, I no longer need the init branch. So it's actually saying, hey, would you like me to clean that up for you so you don't have all these branches lying around? I'd love to. So go ahead and complete the merge for me. Now, when I do this and the merge is complete, if I race back over to our build tab here, and I click on queued, you can see that there's now a build running automatically. This is the CI build that was running because I set up CI on master. While that's running, let me go take you and look at the build definition a little closer. So I took you here before. Some of the other options, you can actually do multi-configurations and simultaneously. So if you want to do debug and release at the same time, we'll actually spin up multiple agents for you, run them both, and then glue them back together so you don't have to wait. Our repository not only works with our Git, but it also works with GitHub. It works with Bitbucket. It works with Subversion. It works with Team Foundation version control. You do not have to switch your version control to start utilizing our system. You can leave your code where it is today, if you use any of these that I just mentioned, and immediately start building out of that inside of our tool system and start taking advantage of it. Our variables, so you can actually protect variables by simply clicking on this button here. It'll encrypt it for you. Triggers can actually watch multiple branches if you wanted to, so I could have actually had it watching my init branch as well, and this would have triggered. And when it's done, you basically get the output. Don't panic. I knew this was going to fail. This is all part of my plan. But as you can see here, there's some cool stuff happened here. This is Git, the gift that doesn't stop giving. Because of my gitignore file, it thought that this file wasn't needed. It's needed, right? So what I'm going to have to do is go back and fix this, thanks to Git, and I'll show you exactly how we can do that. Again, not having to go to the command line, which is really crucial to get this to work. But also I want to point out here, it created a bug and said, Donovan, you broke the build, and wherever you go, this bug is going to haunt you until you fix it, right? And I'll prove that for you, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to run back over into my IDE. I know the problem is this one, right? And this is a file that matched the gitignore file, which is a file that defines what file should not be added to your Git repo. And all I have to do is right-click on it and say, I need you to add this ignored file to source control for me. Okay? But I want to do this directly on the master branch. I don't want to have to go through the pull request again. So what I'm going to have to do now is synchronize my Git repo with the master repo, because remember, my master on my hard drive is empty, but I did the merge in the cloud. So what I can actually do is come back over here. I can say I need to go to sync, and then I can sync all this stuff. And what it should be doing now is pulling down all of my code. And what I want to do is switch over to the master branch. And if I come back over here to sync one more time, you can see that these are the two check-ins that happened in the cloud that I need to now basically sync to my hard drive. So now that I have all the latest changes on my hard drive, I want to go back and show that you can't run from that bug. So here on work items, inside of my IDE, if I were to go down here and run a query that says my bugs, you will see that that bug has basically chased me down. So I cannot forget about it. So all I'm going to do is go to changes. I'm going to drag and drop this guy directly here saying this is the guy that I'm fixing. Try that one more time. There you are. And I'm going to say fix build. And again, I'm just going to go ahead and rush this into my environment, at which point my build should be running. So while that build's running, I'm going to go do some other cool stuff here. I'm going to go ahead and pin this guy to my favorites, which allows me to see a histogram of all the previous builds that I've done, how long they've taken, if they passed or failed, is my build taking longer or less time than it's supposed to. I can also pin this to my dashboard, and the dashboard is going to allow me to actually move it around on the main page that you saw so that people can immediately see how our builds are doing, how our releases are doing, and I'll show you how you can add additional widgets to that as well. So if I were to go back over to Qt here, we're going to be able to see that this guy is actually running. I love the fact that you can see it in real time when you have a 2-3 hour build. You don't know if it's stalled or if it's still working. You can always come here and see that it is actually still doing things before you worry about it actually failing. Now, once the build is done, I can go back here and see a lot of cool, rich information. You'll see the test results over there in the right-hand corner. You can see down at the bottom that we have code coverage. And again, we can do this for Mocha, Pester. We can do it for Java using JUnit test. It actually associated all of the work items to this particular build. It says, hey, I know you were working on this stuff when you did this. It even knows all the commits I made. I can go and look at those particular commits. And it's even saying, hey, now that you have a successful build, why don't we go and create you a release? A release that will then move it into those websites that we created inside of Azure. It's like, sure, let's go ahead and do that. Just like before, we have templates that you can use, but I want to show you how easy it is to start from nothing. So I'm going to go ahead and say, just create an empty one for me. As you can see, I said if you're already using Jenkins, you can continue to use Jenkins. There it is. So you can actually pull directly from Jenkins artifacts that you'd like to deploy using our release management system. I'm going to go ahead and do continuous deployment. That means as soon as that CI build is done, I want this CD to continue and start. And I'm going to go ahead and click on create. One thing I did not show you in our build, which I'm going to show you here in release, because they're very, very similar. Let me first go ahead and name this something a little bit cooler than this. So we're going to go ahead and call this CD. And my first environment will be dev. And now I have this task library, which I didn't show you before. This task library are all the things that we already need to know how to do directly out of the box. You can extend this list. So we have extensions and stuff I'll show you here in just a moment. You can write your own. They're very easy to write. Matter of fact, I wrote all the ones that start with Tracheon. So these are all the tasks that I needed to complete some of my demos. So I actually added them to the system. You remember I said any command line, I can run a batch script. Command line, this works on Linux, Mac, and Windows. I can run PowerShell, I can run Azure PowerShell, remote PowerShell, you name it. So anything that you can imagine you can do from a command line, we can do it from here as well. So let's go ahead and configure a deployment for our Azure website. How many of you have ever actually done what I'm doing right now? Had to create an Azure connection? How many of you did an Azure connection using a service principle? Brave souls. Brave souls. So if you guys aren't clapping when I show you what I'm about to show you, I'm going to be very, very disappointed in you. Okay, because what I'm about to do now is I'm about to create a connection to my Azure account without going through any of the gymnastics that you've had to go through in the past. When I come over here and say I want to create an Azure resource group, I can go ahead and name it ARM because it's ARM template, and here are all of my freaking Azure accounts. Everyone a clap now. Everyone, there you go. No more going and creating a service principal, no more going and downloading certificate files, no more trying to remember what credentials you have inside of your Azure. Every single one of my Azure accounts is here. I simply choose the one that I want. I simply click on OK, and it is now wiring up my Visual Studio Team Services to my Azure account so that I can deploy and build and do whatever I want with Azure from Visual Studio Team Services. Guys, this used to be very, very painful. If you had to create a service principal, you can go to donovanbrown.com and read how many steps it took to go create that. Being able to do it with just simply giving it a name is an astonishing accomplishment for us. So I'm very proud of us for that particular change. Now that I have that, I simply come back and say, hey, I want an ARM template, and it can actually go and query my Azure subscription now and find all of my different websites, and I want one for end-to-end demo. And what I want to do is I want to deploy the output of my build into this particular area, and I can do that really quickly here by simply going and fusing this zip file. Now, not only do I want to do it for dev, but I also need to do it for QA. So let's go ahead and create a QA environment. But before it goes to QA, I want to give it an approval. So I'm going to go ahead and put myself here and say, hey, unless I say so, you're not allowed to go into QA. So I'm going to go ahead and call this QA. All I have to do now is change this from my dev environment to my QA environment. And then I'm going to rinse and repeat this one more time for production. So I'm going to go ahead and clone this. And just this quickly, I've been able to build an entire DevOps pipeline from dev all the way into QA. Now, remember, I said testing is really important. So one other thing I'm going to show you here before I go off of the screen is that from the task tab, you can actually see all the different types of tests that we can run. Load test, automated UI test, performance test, pin test, whatever type of test you want, you can actually run them from here as well. So we're going to go ahead and save this. And to prove that this is all working, I'm going to run back over into my IDE. I'm going to load some code here. So let me go ahead and load my project. I'm going to make a quick change and prove that this change actually makes its way all the way from my fingertips to our end users. So let's just go ahead and change the title here to VS Live 2016. Okay. And then I'm going to go and go to my changes and go ahead and commit this title. All right. And to prove that I'm not pulling a fast one over on you, if I go back over here to Azure, come back to my resource group, and browse to my demo site, I just want to prove that there's nothing there yet. So if I go ahead and click on browse, did I get it? No, I don't think I got it. Let's go back to here, click on browse. Say again? Oh, thank you guys. Did not see that. Now I have three copies. All right, so there we go. It's not, there's nothing there. It's just a blank site waiting for our changes. And one other thing while that's working on, I'm going to show you our marketplace. So I'm going to go back here. I created a release. One other thing I want to do is pin my release to my dashboard as well. And then I'm going to take you to our dashboard. So here's that README file I showed you. Here's our dashboard. And our dashboard actually has our build definition on it. And as you can see, it was running. And you can see already our CI has already begun. So I can go ahead and I can modify this. I can drag this up because this is obviously more important to me than everything else. I can actually add additional widgets to it. So if I want to do application insights, code coverage, markdown widgets, whatever I like to. And I can actually add to this by simply going to our marketplace. So from our marketplace, we're able to add all these different extensions. And these extensions add lots of value to tools that you might already use today. So that you can instantly, like for example, LaunchDarkly has feature flags. Redgate has ReadyRoll for if you're trying to do databases besides SQL Server. So a lot of our partners are coming in here and adding lots of value. And all you have to do is just simply click on one of them. And when you do, you basically get an explanation of what this widget does for you, what parts it adds for you, how to use it. And you simply install it. Or if you're using TFS on-prem, you simply download it. And then you can go ahead and import it into your TFS update 2 or newer. So then what we're going to do is we're going to go back over to our release here. And we can go ahead and see how our release is actually progressing. As you can see, it says it succeeded, and it's waiting for my approval. So QA is not running right now because it's pending, because it's waiting for me to say it's OK. But before I say it's OK, I obviously want to prove that this actually worked. So right here in front of you, in about, 25 minutes, I was able to take a code change from my fingertips through a CI pipeline, tested, and deployed all the way into Azure using our new tool set. So in 5, 4, 3, 2, voila. Right? So that is our change, and you guys could do this at work. So every time a developer makes a code change, you could have it rushing into your environment so that you can go back and test it, run manual tests, and everything else. So that's what I wanted to show you from zero to DevOps right here in front of you. And just imagine how quickly I could have done it if I wasn't talking. Right? So you guys can imagine how fast you can go back and do some of this stuff. So let me finish up with my PowerPoint here so I can guys let you guys go and get something to eat. So after I do a demo like this, I'm always asked, so Donovan, that was awesome. Where do I go to figure out this on my own? It's not live yet, but it will be live. It's called the DevOps Atlas, and it's finally that place that you can go and say, I want to understand what infrastructure's code is. I want to understand what configuration's code is from a theoretical standpoint. I want my CXO to be able to read this and understand why I keep telling them that CI is a good thing. We also have a counter document to each one of these that says, OK, now that you've convinced your CXO that it's important, we're going to show you exactly how to do it with our tool set inside of Visual Studio Team Services. So the DevOps Atlas is coming, and it's going to be a great place for you guys to get a lot of resources when it comes to DevOps. And then finally, if you guys follow me on Twitter, I'm at Donovan Brown. It's the best way to get a hold of me. My buddy James over here and I are constantly on Twitter and helping customers when they have problems, have suggestions. Another great place is to go to Visual Studio's user voice. You can go there and give us suggestions, and trust me, we read those. And you can look at my Twitter today. It is full of nothing but questions. And I either send them a blog post, I will go write the blog post, or I will get James or some other team member involved in that conversation to go get them a solution to the problem that they're actually having. So thank you so much. Enjoy your lunch. It's been a pleasure talking to you guys.